I call this meeting of the Committee of Higher Education, Finance, and Policy to orders. Let it be known that we do have a quorum, and happy to have everyone here. Please note that we welcome, as the House of, the Minnesota House of Representatives, and we appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can hear, view, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of the proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outburst, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles, or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodations, please speak with our sergeant staff identified by the gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain the ticket as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in a removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. And for that, please note that the shakes are available in the North Star Vault until 3, so timeliness is important. Members, if you would review your packets, you will find the minutes of the last meeting, and please note that the minutes had reflected that member Jeff Becker was present, which may or may not have been true. I don't think it was, but either way, he's not a member. So we will need a motion to amend the minutes of that meeting. It'd be the March 12th, 2026 meeting to strike the fact that Representative Becker was reflected in members present. So is anyone willing to make that amendment?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Wolgamott. And all in favor of the verbal amendment to amend the committee meeting minutes from March 12, 2026, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed say nay. The minutes have been amended. All in favor of accepting the minutes as amended by the Chair Wolgamott's motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed say nay. Motion carries and the minutes passed. First bill up on the agenda today is House File 4266, Representative Allen. Representative Allen, we will be laying 4266 over. Representative Allen, to your bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is my intent. Let me get situated quick. Thank you, Chair Novotny and Chair Wolgamott, for the opportunity to be able to present House File 4266, which makes an important improvement to how the state grant program works. As you all know, the state grant program in Minnesota is the main needed based financial aid program. It helps thousands of students across our state afford college each year. For many low income students, the state grant is the difference between being able to attend college or not. I, for one, was one of those individuals, along with several individuals within this room, that have been recipients of this program. The grant formula relies on federal financial aid calculations to estimate how much a student or their family can contribute towards college costs. Under the federal system, some families have such limited income and financial resources that their calculated contribution is below zero. House File 4266 helps ensure the state grant formula handles those situations in a more sustainable way. Specifically, the bill establishes a $0 floor for assigned family responsibility in the state grant formula. Under the current Minnesota law, the formula can recognize contributions down to a negative $1,500. This bill clarifies that when a family family's calculated contribution is negative, the state grant formula will treat it as a zero when determining the family's expected contribution. In simple terms, the formula will no longer go below zero when calculating how much a student or their family can contribute towards college cost. This change prevents negative values from pushing the calculation lower than needed or intended. This bill also preserves the existing flexibility of the OHE or OHE has when the state grant program is has surplus funding available. If OHE determines that legislative appropriations are sufficient to meet the projected grant demand in the second year of a biennium, the office can make targeted adjustments so those dollars can still be support students rather than going unused. One option to increase to increase the living and miscellaneous expense allowance, often called the LME, which is part of the grant formula used to estimate the cost of attending college. Increasing the LME can raise grant awards for eligible students. Another option allows OHE to temporarily recognize deeper negative family contributions than current the current negative $1,500 limit, down to the lowest value allowed under the federal need analysis. This gives the state a way to reflect the financial challenges facing students from families with the least financial resources when additional funding is available. The bill includes guardrails. These adjustments can only occur when OHE determines there are enough resources to meet the projected demand for the state grant program. Any adjustment made are temporary and don't carry forward into the future bienniums. So the bill provides flexibility while still protecting long-term stability of the program. It's important to note that this bill does not increase the state grant appropriation. Instead, it focuses on involving how the formula works and ensuring that any surplus funds the legislature provides can be used effectively. Members, this proposal is about making our financial aid formula reflects reality as close as possible. It directs the support to students who need it while maintaining responsibility oversight of the program's funding. Ultimately, the goal is simple, to keep Minnesota State Grant Program strong, fair, and responsive so that students across the state can continue accessing higher education. Thank you, chairs and members, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Allen. We have a couple of testifiers that are listed, but they're standby. So is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? With that, we'll go to members' questions. Representative Allen?
Just for the members to understand that we do have a fiscal note that has been put in on this particular bill. If you have questions, I was hoping to see if OHE would have the ability to be able to come up to the stand and just kind of discuss where we are in the process of the fiscal note. We are expecting this to have considerable savings, but I'd just like to hear from OHE as far as where they're at in the process.
And who do we have for that? Nicole Whelan? Please identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nicole Whelan, and I am the State Grant Research Manager with the Office of Higher Education. My understanding is that the fiscal note has been submitted, and I'm not sure specifically where it is at with that process then. But I'm happy to answer any questions on the numbers that were in the submitted fiscal note.
All right. Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any questions at the moment. Just wanted to say, first of all, that I'm glad we are laying the bill over. I think, you know, we know when we're talking about the parameters around the state grant program, I think we need to be very careful about not just pulling on one of them without knowing the full effect. And so I'm glad that we're doing that. I'm also glad that we are beginning the conversation about how to make the state grant more sustainable into the future as well. I think that is just a reality that we are encountering in this place. And I want to make sure that we are having a full conversation on that and how that is structured. Recognizing that, you know, when we talked about this before, really in some ways sort of this is a good problem to have because we have more students going to college, and in particular what we're seeing with this is that many students who are going to college are coming from the neediest families, and that I think, I hope, and I believe is something that we all want to see. And so I think this is an important piece of the conversation. I look forward to the other pieces. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. Any other questions? Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Allen, I think wanted to figure out what is the savings that we're trying to get from this bill. If you look into now knowing that $100-something million shortfall in the state grant program, what is the intent of this bill to get savings?
Representative Allen or your testifier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Knorr. I guess I'll let you speak to intent, but in terms of the actual dollar figure, the as the bill is written, the biennial reduction would be $41.256 million, and of that, $36.733 million is in fiscal year 2027.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a significant reduction, which means I think how do we make sure we balance the process whereby students who need the most are not left out from this process? Because, you know, trying to balance on the backs of the students who need the most is not the right way to do this. They never asked for this. The whole process is we're trying to create an opportunity for more students who want to enroll in post-secondary education so we can have a thriving, folks who are qualified, employed, so that they have the skills needed. This bill goes backwards because we're not allowing them to be able to afford college. Some of them may end up having student loan debt, which they did not sign up for that. So how are we going to balance that? We're shifting the cost to the students who need the most.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Chair Novotny, and thank you, Representative Knorr, for the question. The intent of this is to be able to make sure the program actually stays active and going. I know this was a change that was made back in 2021, and looking at it from at least through the lens of going to college myself, me and my wife both ended up qualifying for this as we were going through college. And, to have the program there instead of having it go under, I think, is something that we don't want to see happen specifically with this. I was encouraged to see today, actually, to your point, that the governor's supplemental budget ended up coming out here today at noon. And one of the recommendations is to do exactly what this bill recommends, is to take the SAI and go back to zero on it. It's not ideal. I think we can all agree, on that. But sometimes these are situations that aren't what we want, but they're the situations that we have to deal with and the realities we have to work through. And I know with the impact it had in my life and my wife's life and many of us around this committee room, it's to keep it here in place, I think, is more valuable than anything else. So I do acknowledge the fact there is going to be some short-term and impact, but the way the bill is written, if we do have surplus, we can actually go back, and more than likely, they could actually end up getting more money per student, depending on if OHE has more money to be able to work with. So,
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we should always look for options. I always say we need to look at options. I don't want to look at the governor's recommendation cutting some of the most needed programs. I will say that we do have a responsibility to look for ways that we can find supplemental funding without going through some of the hassles of reducing the available resources to those who need the most. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Allen, response.
I just appreciate the question, so thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rarick, are you there?
Thank you. I am here. Good to be back. So I would note that we've got $102 million deficit projected in the state grant program. We have got a big problem. We had a big problem last session, and we were able to close the gap with some new funding, very, very small, about $22 million. There is no new funding in the governor's budget, though. So just so you know, the governor is making this change. He recommended this change. Oh, he looked at all the different options of how to close a gap of $102 million going forward in the state grant program. And this is one of the things that they brought forward. So I think this is viable and interesting, and that we definitely need to talk about this. $41 million would go a lot to close that gap. And if you want to cut other programs, I am very, very interested in that, because I came up with about, well, the whole committee on my side, the Republican side of the committee, came up with about $136 million of money that we could cut and reallocate to the state grant program. And while we made some measures and made some movement in that direction, we certainly could do that, but we still will have a structural imbalance moving forward. As you can see, this is a perpetual problem. We fixed it last session, and here it is slapping us in the face again. So I would love to look at all the different options, but this literally is the biggest hindrance for us balancing this budget and balancing the $102 million deficit. So we have majorly changed the state grant program by adding North Star Promise, and now we're in another huge hole. So I thank you, Representative Allen, for bringing this bill forward. I've been in contact with OHE this morning and looking at the governor's budget and looking at how much money that this would save. And while it's not ideal, we put ourselves in this position. We put the students in this position because we gave them lots and lots of promises that we knew right now we don't have the money to fulfill. So let's put our heads together and figure out how to make this work. But again, thank you, Representative Allen, for bringing this great bill forward, and I look forward to having more conversations. And if we want to cut more programs and reallocate them and find other ways to cut the structural imbalance, I'm all ears. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else? Then, Representative Allen, closing remarks.
Thank you.
Stand by. Chair Wolgamott.
Representative Allen, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I appreciate the work that you and all the members of this committee are doing in an attempt to make the state grant program whole and live up to that promise that we've made to the students who are able to attend college in the state grant program. Right now, I'm going to encourage members to vote no on this. Oh, we're laying it over. Okay, my apologies. All right. Well, if we were going to move forward, that's what I would encourage, not necessarily because of the solution, but because I want to make sure that we're looking at all the different options available to resolve this problem. So just want to thank you for this, and Chair Novotny, members of both the House GOP and DFL, we look forward to working together as we close out the session on finding a solution, make the state grant program whole. And again, I want to thank you, Representative Allen, for your hard work on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Chair Wolgamott, Representative Allen, closing statement.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Chair Wolgamott, I appreciate you taking the time to be able to take a look at this bill before us today. Like I said before, it's, you know, there's things in life that come along that kind of nudge you different directions as you go through life, right? I was fortunate enough to be able to attend the University of Minnesota. That's where I met my wife. We were recipients of this grant, and it's these little things in life that kind of nudge you particular directions. And I'd like to think that I wouldn't have the opportunity to be sitting here before you today if it wasn't for maybe this being in place and having the opportunities I've had through different things. So this is one of those things I'm more than happy to champion and fight for, and I think it's worthwhile. I'm looking forward to further conversations with OHE and hopefully with the governor's office that we can kind of somehow come to a resolution on this and maybe get this out of committee. So anyway, thank you very much for your time.
With that, the bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Allen, and testifier. Next up, we have University of Minnesota presentation on their bonding request with Vice President of University Services, Alice Robert Davis, the Dean of the School of Dentistry, Dr. Keith Mays, and the Undergraduate Student Government President, Riley Hetland. Vice President Robert Davis, will you be first?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
State your full name and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Alice Roberts Davis. I'm Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. We really look forward to sharing our 2026 capital request with you. Before we begin, we really want to thank this committee for your advocacy last year. We especially appreciate Co-Chair Wolgamott's leadership as the chief author of the 2025 HEPR funding. That $60 million investment is already at work at our university. It's allowing us to reinvest in our learning environments and ensure that our campuses and research centers remain resilient for the next generation of Minnesota's learners and teachers across the entire state. As you know, HEPR projects aren't glamorous. They often don't get ribbon-cutting ceremonies or grand openings, but they are the most fundamental work that we do to keep our campuses safe, accessible, and functional. And because of your past support, we are literally shouting, HEPR made it happen, from our newly replaced rooftops across our campuses. These photos show the real-world results of your investment, keeping our buildings dry, our labs running, and our historic buildings preserved for the next generation of Minnesotans. We know that you played a role in last year's bill, so again, we thank you very kindly for that. So turning our attention to the future, our 2026 capital request focuses on three high-impact priorities. First, HEPR at $100 million. As always, asset preservation is our first priority. This request funds the hidden but critical work, such as roofs, windows, and HVAC, needed to renew and extend the life of facilities at every campus, plus our 10 research and outreach facilities and field stations that span the entire state. Second is the St. Paul Campus Center for $84 million. This remains our top project priority, and this project will replace the outdated Student Center and McGraw Library with a single 95,000 square foot heart of the campus that integrates student services, dining, future-ready library, and active learning classrooms. And then the dentistry clinical renovation for $100 million. We are requesting funds to renovate Moose Tower for the state's only school of dentistry. Since the U trains over 70% of Minnesota's dentists, this is a direct investment in the long-term healthcare workforce for all 87 Minnesota counties. And we'll talk a little bit about each of these projects in more detail. So HEPR is more than just a line item. It's been the anchor of our state requests since the program was first enacted in the 1990s. It is our most efficient tool for protecting the public's investment in the university. We are particularly grateful to Co-Chair Wolgamott again for authoring House File 3928, which carried our $100 million request for this session. This funding is targeted and ready to deploy. We would have system-wide reach, and it would fund more than 50 critical projects across at least 45 buildings. It also has statewide impact. Because this isn't just a Twin Cities request, it touches all of our campuses and our dozen research and outreach facilities from Crookston to Grand Rapids to Lamberton. And then finally, it is mission critical. We manage nearly 33 million square feet of space and infrastructure, and without consistent HEPR funding, we simply cannot keep pace with the natural aging of these assets. When a roof fails or an historic building and HVAC system goes offline, it doesn't just damage a building, it displaces students, it interrupts valuable life-saving research, and ultimately it costs the state more in emergency repairs. So this request allows us to stay ahead of the curve and ensure that our facilities remain safe, dry, and functional for the next generation of Minnesotans. St. Paul Campus Center. For over a century, the St. Paul campus has been Minnesota's powerhouse for agriculture, natural resources, and veterinary medicine. However, as you saw during your visit, the physical heart of this campus has not kept pace with its world-class programming. The new St. Paul Campus Center is the first domino for campus-wide revitalization. By replacing the separate aging footprints of the St. Paul Campus Center and the McCraw Library, we create a single front door to the campus. This transforms two outdated buildings into one vibrant hub where academic life, health services, and student well-being live under one roof. These renderings show an after that our students deserve. We would like to specifically thank Representative Keith Allen for chief authoring the bill for this project. As an animal science graduate and a proud lifetime gopher, Representative Allen knows this campus firsthand. We're grateful for his leadership in ensuring that the next generation of leaders in agriculture, biological sciences, and veterinary medicine all have access to the modern facilities they need to solve the complex challenges that face our state's land, animals, environment, and people. But to provide an even better perspective on what we need, I'd like to introduce a current student, Riley Hetland. Riley is a CFAN student and the president of our undergraduate student government. She is the first student body president who is primarily based on the St. Paul campus, and she can speak directly to how this project will impact the students who rely on those facilities daily.
Please identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Riley Hetland, and I am the undergraduate student body president of the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I am also a proud St. Paul student in our College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources Science, or CFANS, where I major in environmental sciences. I'm here to share some student perspectives of what it's like to be a student relying on the resources of our current St. Paul campus. I don't want you all to get the wrong impression of CFANS because it's a truly amazing place to go to school. We have one of the top environmental science programs in the country. We are one of the only colleges in the country that have large animals on campus that students can learn with. The students and faculty are fabulous. The infrastructure, though, does not meet that same standard. I have been in a career fair in our student center where the power has gone out and we're left staring at future employers sweating in the dark. Our university has stopped hosting community events on St. Paul campus because the infrastructure isn't able to handle them. There's flooding, there's mice, there's asbestos, there's power outages, and probably most devastating for me and my classmates, there are no food options. Literally, if you're on St. Paul campus at dinner time, there is no place to get food. There are no places to work collaboratively and be in community with our classmates. No one I know wants to live on St. Paul campus, and no one wants to spend time on St. Paul campus, and I know my classmates have told me that they avoid taking classes on St. Paul campus as much as humanly possible, and I don't blame them. The sentiment that I want to leave you with is that I love my school. Our faculty and opportunities are absolutely amazing, but our infrastructure does not meet that same quality of the education that we get there. It's deterring students from attending the U. It's deterring students from spending time on St. Paul campus. A new community space with food options like this proposal would completely change this and make St. Paul campus's infrastructure match that caliber of its students, faculty, and the education that it provides. So please support this request and please support St. Paul students.
Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'll introduce our Dean Mays in just a moment. We'd like to turn to the School of Dentistry and modernize Moose Tower. It's the essential first step in addressing Minnesota's dental workforce gap. Minnesota loses 160 dentists to retirement each year, while we only graduate 120. Our current infrastructure has reached its physical and technical limits, and it is increasingly difficult to evolve our training capacity to meet the rising demand for care throughout the state, especially in rural and underserved communities. We have the only dental school in the state. We train over 70% of Minnesota's dentists, and we have to provide modern, high-tech facilities they expect in order to go into the workforce after graduation. We also accommodate 90,000 annual visits. We are the primary provider for low-income and uninsured patients who travel from across the state for specialized care. And most of our peer institutions have modernized in the last decade, so we have to do the same in order to remain competitive nationally. We welcome you to come and tour Moose Tower if you have not done so already, and you can see the incredible work that's being done in a facility that has long outlived its prime. So with that, I'd like to introduce Dean Keith Mays to explain the importance of this project for every corner of our state. Dean Mays is not only the leader of our School of Dentistry, but he is also a national voice in dental education, and he's here to share how this project addresses our workforce crisis, our statewide training footprint, and our role as a vital safety net for so many vulnerable Minnesotans.
Mr. Mays, identify yourself and begin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Keith Mays, Dean of the Dental School. Thank you for giving us a time to come and share a little bit about our big projects that we are really excited about. As VP Roberts Davis has illuminated, the School of Dentistry has been located in Moose Health Science Tower since the mid-1970s without any significant renovations. The school has a teaching, research, and clinical enterprise, and we are ranked 38th in the Shanghai rankings and 13th in the Blue Ridge Research rankings. We are the only dental school in Minnesota and the only dental school between here and the Pacific Northwest. The School of Dentistry has a significant impact on the health of Minnesotans. We provide approximately 90,000 patient visits, as has been said, and 48% of those patients rely upon medical assistance programs, making us one of the largest safety net providers in the state. Additionally, our students provide care to approximately 16,000 patients at our partnering 24 outreach sites in rural and urban communities across the state, and an additional 1,200 visits with our mobile dental clinic. From a workforce perspective, as has been stated, there are approximately 160 dentists retiring annually, and we only graduate 120. The proposed renovations will create the capacity for us to better meet the workforce needs of the future. It is also an opportunity to modernize our facilities by integrating digital dentistry, 3D printing, AI-supported diagnostics, in a team-based care environment and create a nation-leading clinical environment. The proposed renovations will also have a positive impact on our future recruitment efforts. As has been stated, we are one of the few Big Ten schools who has not had a renovation in the recent decade. A failure to renovate will result in students choosing other institutions for their dental training. We believe these renovations are not only about brick and mortar, but are an investment in the oral health and the overall health of Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any other people that wanted to testify on this? All right. Members, questions?
If I may, Mr.
Chair.
Go
ahead.
I did want to share a new proposal from the University of Minnesota as well. We have a major shift in how the university is prioritizing its own resources. We are launching a system-wide capital investment initiative to aggressively tackle our own deferred renewal. We have a $150 million jumpstart. Starting with the FY26 budget, our Board of Regents approved a $10 million recurring reinvestment to leverage approximately $150 million in new university-backed funding. It's a long-term strategy for us, and it's sustained through 2034 as proposed. This internal commitment will yield $750 million in total reinvestment. This represents a significant reallocation of core operational funding to save our physical infrastructure. Even with our $750 million commitment, the total system need is over $6 billion. So as we know, buildings never stop aging, and the scale of the challenge really requires a true partnership. The state largely built these assets, and they are the backbone that allows the university to drive $11.5 billion annually in economic impact. So we're stepping up with our own down payment, and we really need the state's continued partnership to ensure that these public assets don't cross the point of no return. So in closing, I just want to leave you with a promise regarding accountability. When the state invests in the University of Minnesota, we put that money to work immediately. We have a proven track record, and historically, we ensure that 90% of our appropriations are spent or encumbered within just 2 years of the bill's passage. We don't sit on the funds, we deploy them. These projects translate directly into high-paying jobs for the constituents you represent, contractors, tradespeople, architects, and engineers across the state. And we truly believe that the success of the university and the prosperity of the state are intertwined. So Thank you for your time and your interest this afternoon. We thank you also for your continued advocacy for the students and citizens we serve together, and we will stand for any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Vice President Roberts Davis. Members, questions? Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here today and presenting your capital appropriations request. So on the last slide that you just put up, this was to the heart of my question. When we invest these HEPR dollars in communities across our state, they do have a ripple effect, and they do, in fact, also generate tax revenue that comes back to us. Has anybody done the net analysis of what that looks like?
Vice President Roberts Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cleavorn, not specifically on HEPR dollars, but we do have an economic impact study that shows that the university generates about $11.5 billion of economic impact every single year in the state of Minnesota. We do have information about what those construction projects look like, how much money we're spending on construction, and again, most of that money goes to local construction firms, engineers, architects, construction workers, and so the money does go directly back into our Minnesotans' pockets.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when those vendors and contractors have money, they spend them in restaurants and they build houses for people and they do all kinds of good things in our community. So I think it would be interesting to have a look at this. To your student testifier, I would like to say I was at the University of Minnesota in the early 80s. When the library was new, and at that time, if I recall, the study spaces were not that large, the footprint was not that large, and that was decades ago. So I would think that the technology costs are also quite, for students, when I say cost, I mean like ability to have technology and things like that, are also quite lacking. Is that true?
Ms. Hetland.
Yeah, so you're definitely right in saying that our study spaces are quite lacking. There's no places to take like a Zoom call. All of our study spaces, there's like maybe 5 dedicated study rooms in our current library, and of those, none of them have like complete like ceilings on them. So if you take a Zoom call, everyone can just hear whatever you're talking about. And as far as like personal tech costs, that's something that's massive. I don't know anyone who relies on university resources for like their computers or anything like that. Everyone that I've talked to has to buy their own laptops and computers and things like that to facilitate that. And so, yeah, that is definitely a burden on students as well.
And one more follow-up.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Chair Novotny. The other thing I will say is that coming to the St. Paul campus in the early 80s is what caused me to fall in love with the state of Minnesota. It's a beautiful campus. It has many wonderful things about it, right? And my love for agriculture really was sparked there. So food science, agriculture, weed science, genetics, horticulture, all the good things, right? So I would like to just commit to you that I will do what I can to help your campus stay strong and survive. And then for Moose Tower, as a patient that goes to Moose Tower, that building definitely needs some attention. And I was delighted when they moved pulmonary out of the basement and into the new building, because the mold was so bad that those of us with asthma were sick going into the building. So for the dental school, I would really like to see you have that new space that you need. And thank you for the work that you do for the state of Minnesota. I appreciate all of you.
Go ahead, Vice President Roberts Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cleavorn, I just wanted to also reiterate thank you for the HEPR funding, because from the HEPR funding last year, we were able to commit $25 million towards the renovation of the Food Science Nutrition Building. And out of the $150 million that I mentioned earlier in our new fund, we will pair that with another $25 million. So we will do a complete food science nutrition building renovation, and that will be, again, one of the first dominoes to fall for reinvestment in the St. Paul campus, followed by hopefully the St. Paul Campus Center, and we can really start to create some momentum around revitalizing that campus.
Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to thank you for coming to talk about the dental school project. I'm really excited to hear about that. I'm the dental school and dentistry in particular kind of an interest of mine, and it's really striking that 48% of your patients use medical assistance. I know it's a really important resource for people with complex dental issues, right, on medical assistance. And people with disabilities often from all over the state are going to the university to get their dental care because of the special needs that they have. And coupled with your educational mission, and you talked about, you know, being the only one and how critical that is, I just would really like to see this happen. I know it's been needed for a long time, and it's just the dental school is kind of one of those quiet things that I don't know how many Minnesotans kind of realize it, but it's really critical that, you know, one of the things I've learned over the years from a lot of dentists who've come and worked with me on various things is that, you know, the teeth are a part of the mouth, and you can't be healthy if you have bad dental problems. And so this is something that everybody needs. We definitely need to be watching for our, you know, maintaining and building our workforce in this area, and just really excited to hear about the project. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you all just first of all for being here. I wanted to follow up, Vice President Roberts Davis, you said kind of quickly, did you say even with this new investment plan, the unmet need is $6 billion? Did I hear that number correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is accurate. $6 billion is deferred maintenance need at the university.
If we weren't in
plight, Representative Coulter.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. If we weren't in plight company, I'd have some strong language about that. But I think that just really kind of shows how important these dollars are and how important it is that we keep up with the need, that you know, we can't just keep doing it in these short bursts every once in a while, that it really needs to be a consistent effort. So I'm also really excited about this this dental school project. I think I didn't even realize that we were the only dental school between here and the Pacific Northwest, which I think just again shows just how exceptional the University of Minnesota is. So I'm hopeful we can move forward on that and meet folks' needs. And then Ms. Hetland, I just wanted to say thank you for being here. Maybe we need like a rules change or something. I think we should have students in this committee every single time we meet. I think you're the most important constituency we have, I think, on this committee. And so I just hope we can keep hearing from students about what life is really like for folks who are doing the learning. Thank you.
Representative Nora.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't want to put Vice President on the spot, but 100% we should get the HEPA, which I think most of us will agree with. And then the question, I don't want to put Dean Mays versus President Hetland. Which project will you choose as a priority? And are we at the place whereby we have a mechanism to do the design phase, or are we on the shovel-ready project for those two?
Chair Novotny.
Vice President Robert Davis.
Representative Knorr, that's a great question. HEPR is our top priority, as it is every year. If we're thinking about projects specifically, revitalizing the St. Paul campus has been something that we've wanted to do for a very long time. It's very much so overdue. It, again, would allow a large domino to fall that will create some momentum around the St. Paul campus, which is, you know, as a top poultry-producing state, a top ag state, we have a unique opportunity in St. Paul. We are the only school that has an agricultural campus in the heart of an urban area. And so we could attract so many students to this community with better facilities, frankly. So that is our top priority for this year. And we hope that we can do them all, but we will continue to work toward the dentistry school as well. But if we had to prioritize, that would be the priority.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all the testifiers, especially the student from the St. Paul campus. It's been a delight to have you in committee. And I just wanted to understand from you, Vice President, more how the St. Paul campus will also interface with what's being newly launched down in Austin, because we don't want to duplicate effort, and we're putting a lot of money down there. So if you could just explain to us sort of how they work together, what your vision is, and why both are needed. Thank you.
Vice President Roberts Davis.
Chair Novotny, Co-Chair Robbins, we actually have taken a bit of a pause on the farm project that you're referencing down in Austin. We do understand that we have a lot that we need to do around agriculture, and that project had grown to a scope and size that was probably not appropriate for today. And so we are reevaluating that to find the right scope and size for the farm project. It is not at all in competition with what we're proposing for the existing St. Paul campus.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. So I was not aware of that. I don't know if other members of the committee were aware with that. How much have we already spent on that project?
Vice President Roberts Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have purchased land in Austin. We have done some preliminary pre-design work. I can get you an exact amount for how much we've spent, but those are assets that we continue to own and control and lease back for farming, so it's not land that is not being used at this point in time. It's still an investment for the university, but building on that property has probably got a little bit longer horizon than we previously proposed. There was a large capital request last year for the farm project that we did not achieve, and so without state funding for the farm project, we really just aren't able to achieve a project of that scope and size.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I appreciate that answer, and I think further discussion is needed on understanding the role of both of these projects, the priority for each, and how they work together, because we do not want to put more money into one and then you just switch, which seemed to be what was happening last year in the opposite direction, honestly. So I find this conversation, you know, surprising, and we really do need to have a broader conversation with university about their vision, their strategic plan for the ag school moving forward, and how these pieces work together, because I think without understanding that, it's hard to know where to put the money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of struck by Vice Chair Coulter's comment that stating that they have a $9 billion deferred maintenance when we had an $18 billion surplus, and we could have done all kinds of things. Penn State's got quite a big deferred maintenance issue, too. I think it's over $3 billion. We could have wiped out all of that with that $18 billion surplus, but here we are. I actually have a question, though, quickly, just for the dean of the dental school. And you talked about modern dentistry. And so I was just wondering, included in that modern dentistry, do you talk about safe extraction of silver fillings that have about 60% mercury? And is that one of the things that you do at this modern dental school?
Dean Mays.
Thank you for that question. We do provide amalgam fillings, which has a mercury content in it. We also do provide composite resin, which is a non-amalgam filling. And that is predominantly the restorations that we utilize. Most of the decisions around restoration selection or choice is based upon the patient's decision.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually talking about the removal of those. So there is a very specific procedure to safely remove the silver fillings that are 60% mercury. And I'm just wondering if you teach these new dentists how to safely remove it so you don't poison people with mercury.
I would say yes, we do teach. I'm sorry, excuse me. Yes, we do teach our students how to safely remove them, Malcolm.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I know it's not exactly in the center of what we're going to be talking about, but next week I believe we're talking about regenerative farming. I'm very excited to hear about that, and I'm wondering if the U can talk a little bit about any efforts that you are making in teaching our young new farmers regenerative farming, which will actually heal the soil and give us healthy soil.
Would that be for Vice President Roberts Davis or Testifier Hetland?
Thank you, Mr. Robert Chair. Davis. Representative Rarick, it sounds like our student knows something about regenerative farming, so we'll let her go.
Testifier Hetland.
Yeah, just a little bit. I'm an environmental science student, so I have taken classes on sustainable farming practices and regenerative farming practices. And so, yeah, it is taught, and there's a lot of active research going on with specifically like cover crops and things like that, and how we can use cover crops and turn them into cash crops. So things like, I'm sure you guys have heard from like the Forever Green Initiative. Yeah, so for things like that, using cover crops like winter camelina and others to create sustainable jet fuel is something that's actively going on right now at our St. Paul campus is the hub of that. So there's things like that. There's lots of just like how we can utilize and create cash crops out of even buffer strips and things like that. So parcels of land that usually wouldn't be used. But yes, I guess the answer to that.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's great. I think that we're kind of coming full circle. So when I was a child growing up on what my dad called a hobby farm, which was unfair because it was way too much work to be called a hobby, but nonetheless, we just did it the old-fashioned way, and the animals just grazed, and we raised hay and sometimes some oats for the horses a little bit, and we had chickens, and it was just a very simple way to do it. We had no chemical input whatsoever, none, zero. We used to do it that way, and I'd love to see a return to that, so I'm optimistic a little bit that there's some at least move it in that direction. There's so much more to talk about when you talk about regenerative farming, which we will have a full hearing about. I think it's incredibly important to healing our land and removing toxic chemicals from our food. So I'm glad that at least there's a little bit of direction. I'm really hoping that the EU really takes that bull by the horn, so to speak, and actually goes full in on learning about healthy soils, regenerative farming, reducing or eliminating toxic chemicals from the soil and the water. So I'm encouraged, but there's a way, it's much further to go. And I'd love to see the dental school once I recover from my concussion here. I would love to actually tour and see firsthand what you do, and for the dental school, if you're actually doing the extractions the safe way, there's very specific things you need to do with removing silver fillings. So I'm very interested in all of that, and I'm glad that you're bringing this presentation to us today. Thank you so much. And also just a word to President Cunningham. We are thinking about you, and you're in my prayers, and hopefully we'll see you back in action soon. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chair Wolgamott.
Well, thank you so much, Chair Novotny, and thank you so much to our testifiers for the thoughtful presentation and to the members for the thoughtful discussion on this. Members, if there is one thing that I would like for you to remember from this committee in the year 2026, it's remember this. HEPR is cheaper. HEPR is cheaper. It is way cheaper to invest in HEPR and invest in maintenance and improvements than it is to have to totally replace things or have emergency repairs. And I would challenge all of us to think of maybe some new ways that we can fund this and deal with the shortfall that Vice Chair Coulter brought to our attention. Because we own, let's not forget, the state of Minnesota owns these buildings. These are state-owned buildings. And if we don't take care of them, they will continue to crumble. They will continue to get more and more expensive. Not only is that a bad way to take care of the things that we own, but it hurts us as an issue of competitiveness. If we don't improve our facilities and get great 21st century facilities where students can come and learn and get the education they need to prepare them for their future careers, we're going to lose out to other states that do. And so I can't thank the university and the test fires enough. It's been such an honor to partner with you on HEPA requests over the years. I'm so proud to see the reports of the progress that's been made on the funding that we have been able to secure. But I really hope that going forward, members of this committee will remember that HEPA is cheaper and we get such an incredible return on our investment when we take care of what we own. I know I'm as guilty of it too. We all love those bright, shiny objects in the ribbon cuttings in our districts. You know, it's rare that we run for re-election on getting a new roof or improving HVAC, but it's crucially important to who we are as the state of Minnesota and what we can do to prepare our workforce for the 21st century. So thank you again to the testifiers, and we'll continue to advocate for HEPA funding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, our plan is to meet Tuesday, March 24th, 2026. Thank you, members and nonpartisan staff, for being here. This meeting is now adjourned.